My first guest in this edition is Barbara Comstock, a former official at the Department of Justice and a longtime Republican strategist. She joins me now to talk about the career on the Supreme Court of retiring Justice David Souter, as well as what we ought to expect from President Obama in nominating a successor. And Barbara, thanks so much for being with us.
Good to be with you.
David Souter was one of those folks that did not turn out to be the justice that the nominating president thought they would be, first nominated in 1990 by the President George H.W. Bush. What was it about him that you think endeared him to the president at the time, and why was he, in the end, a justice that very few expected?
I think there was a total mismatch on the front end. You know, he really didn't have much of a record, and I think because of the contentious hearings that preceded him, like the Bork nomination, and they kind of went the direction of, well, let's pick someone no one can really figure out where they're at. Ironically, if you go back and look at the confirmation hearings with Justice Souter, you had a lot of liberal groups like the feminist groups and the abortion rights groups and some of the civil rights groups very much oppose him. They were out making all kinds of claims about how he was going to be terrible for this or that other group. So ironically, those guys who we ended up aligning with opposed him initially. Does go to show you never quite know what you're going to get with a justice. But I think plenty of Republican lawyers and Bush 1 administration officials will acknowledge that was not their finest hour.
Barbara, in terms of looking at his performance on the bench over the last 18-19 years, clearly he sided on the liberal side of virtually all the cases. What type of judicial philosophy, as far as you can tell, did he employ?
I think it was a standard liberal philosophy that, a more activist court, a court that didn't really look so much at what the law was, but maybe sort of looking at it as a super legislature. I mean, he tended, he became more and more, one of the justices who sided with that view of the court that says, I kind of like what Obama said he wants, somebody who empathizes and understands what it's like in a particular position. And that's something you may want as a legislator, you may want as a governor, but as a judge, you want somebody, I would argue, that understands the law. Just like when you get a brain surgeon, it might be nice if they have a nice bedside manner, but you want to make sure they know how to take the tumor out. With a justice, you want somebody who, obviously it's nice if they're a nice person, but the fundamental qualification is to understand what the law should be. And unfortunately, we heard President Obama's statement. He really didn't talk a whole lot about the law. He talked about empathy and sort of those feel-good things. And he is, President Obama is somebody who opposed Justice Roberts, and he did it on sort of a bizarre basis of, well, I don't know if he can empathize with people, even though people across the political spectrum recognize that Chief Justice Roberts was a brilliant jurist, and certainly anyone who reads his very measured opinions that are very reasonable. I can't think of an opinion that really mainstream people would have a problem with to date. But he had lots of harsh things to say about Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Alito when they were going through their confirmation hearings. And President Obama did oppose both of them, even though you had a lot of Democrats and a lot of Democrat lawyers out there who may not have agreed with, where they might come down with a particular decision, but they recognize that they were brilliant jurists.
Barbara, you mentioned the president today saying he wanted a jurist, a new Supreme Court justice who could empathize with people, understand what struggles they were going through, and so forth. He said the same thing on the campaign trail, and even several years before even running for the U.S. Senate in that now famous radio interview back in 2001, in which he also said that the civil rights movement should have employed the U.S. court system to redistribute wealth. When you look at his previous statements on this, but particularly the empathy point today, is that code word for judicial activism?
Oh, it certainly is. I mean, you're absolutely correct on that interview where he talked about judges spreading the wealth. I mean, he clearly not only thought that it was okay to do it legislatively, which is alarming enough, and obviously we're seeing a lot of that, but he even thought judges judicially. I mean, that is a very, very far left and extreme position where he thought judges should, just as part and parcel of their role, be reallocating wealth as a philosophy. And there is absolutely nothing in the Constitution or any of our really mainstream jurisprudence history which would lend you to that opinion. That is really a politicization of the bench that really goes far beyond even where someone like a Justice Souter is. So I think what you're going to see is probably somebody who's even more to the left of Justice Souter, obviously probably younger. So, this reminds us that elections do have consequences, and this is a Supreme Court nomination that we will live with for years and potentially decades. And that's why really understanding what kind of philosophy a president has on this is quite an important thing, because it could affect our lives on many issues, property rights issues. It's very tenuous basis there. Things like, the Pledge of Allegiance, whether we can have God in it, that's something that has been, the courts have brought up and, potentially think that that should be thrown out. So I think, and then think about how we're going to treat terrorists and whether we have to, what kind of rights we have to give them, that's something that's very borderline. So you could have a real lurch even more to the left here on some of these key sort of issues that I think most American people think should be decided in the legislature, regardless of where you come down on a particular issue, even, on some of the more difficult issues like marriage and abortion. There is a philosophy that recognizes, hey, that should be decided by the legislature and the people, and then you live with whatever the decision is, but you don't have 9 unelected judges deciding to redefine marriage or to say whether or not something like partial birth abortion, which this current Supreme Court has said, yes, that can be banned. It's that's at the end of the abortion term. It's a very extreme thing and will allow legislatures to do that. They also, you have people who want to make it, have the court mandate that you have to fund abortion. And, of course, that's something that's a very extreme position that many Democrats oppose. They figure a neutral position is I might support abortion rights, but not make you and your tax dollars go to funding that. So I think you can still see a lot of change in the court on some of those key issues that, really should be decided by the legislature.
Couple minutes left here with former Justice Department official Barbara Comstock. And Barbara, our listeners should also know that you've spent some time working on Capitol Hill, specifically with the Senate Judiciary Committee. So one of the things that we'll be hearing is the two different schools of thought. We've clearly seen with the two most recent appointments by President George W. Bush that Democrats did oppose nominees on ideology. Some have said on the Republican side that if a nominee is simply qualified, regardless of ideology, that that's good enough for them. What should be the approach of the Senate Republicans here?
Well, I think you always want to have, first and foremost, they have to be a good judge, understand the law, and have basic qualifications, that they, with their legal background, and then, see if they are in that mainstream. Now, I think most of Republicans confirmed Justice Ginsburg, even though she clearly is fairly far to the left, and they did it on the basis knowing that she was far to the left, but they felt she had the qualifications, and they were very respectful of her. I think in contrast, you had people like when Obama was a senator, and Joe Biden and Hillary Clinton, they all opposed people like Roberts and Alito instead of doing what a lot of Republicans did, which is support Ginsburg. So I think it'll really depend on the individual and their qualifications. And if they're so far out of the mainstream or their judicial temperament or basic things like that, I think you will see people raise concerns. But by and large, Republicans have been very respectful in this process of confirmation hearings and realizing, the president gets to pick their nominee, and that's part of the election process. We knew with President Obama we would get judicial nominees who were far to the left of what John McCain certainly would have appointed. So that's part of our process, and we abide by it. Unfortunately, Democrats have often made these very contentious and ugly and personal attacks, starting with certainly Judge Bork or with Clarence Thomas's confirmation hearing, and even with Roberts and Alito, people got particularly you know, some of these members got very nasty and made, you know, characterizations. I mean, even President Obama's today kind of, or I think actually his press secretary was saying, well, you know, when Roberts and Alito went through, he was concerned about their lack of empathy. Well, you know, what does he know about their judicial decisions? Certainly has something to do with their empathy and their characteristics as an individual. And I think that's an unfair type of characterization.
Barbara, unfortunately, our time is up. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Barbara Comstock, former Department of Justice official, longtime Republican strategist, also formerly worked with the Senate Judiciary Committee. This is Dateline Washington.